Hello, everybody, and welcome to the On the Farm Pitcher List podcast about all things prospect, dynasty, and minor league related. Everyone, make sure to subscribe to the Pitcher List Podcast Network, and if you do so choose, leave us a rating and review. You could also follow the On the Farm podcast at PL On the Farm on Twitter, as well as Rick at Must Be the Hawk, and myself at Jake Mache. You can send us any questions that you'd like to cover on a future episode, and we will definitely take anything that y'all want to hear about. And today, we're going to do a similar thing to what we did last episode, where we looked at a lot of like lower minors guys that have had really good starts. We're going to do a very similar thing for the upper minors. So talk about AA and AAA, as well as get some more of Rick's scouting abilities, some live looks that he was able to get over the last week. And so got a good episode for y'all. And it's exciting for sure, because a lot of these guys are pretty close to the majors, and we'll see a ton of them even this season. So we'll definitely get into that, and hopefully have some really great nuggets for you all. But before we do, Rick, how's it going?
I'm doing good, Jake. Doing good. Lots of baseball going on. Been getting out to some games. Got my press pass, so getting out to the games. Trying to get a chance to talk to some of the guys. It's just been a little bit difficult here recently, but it'll get better as the summer goes on. Yeah, I've been watching a lot of Mets games too, which has been kind of nice. Usually when I'm in prospect mode, I don't watch a ton of major league games, but these new City Connect jerseys are fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I am thrilled. I am not thrilled about the $175 for them, because I was totally going to get one of those, and now I'm going to have to think about my life choices.
Yeah, no, the City Connects are awesome. When the White Sox did theirs, which is like one of the first, and of course, I think the best, it was like, I saw, you know, obviously I don't live in the Chicago area anymore, and my dad like drives past the stadium on his way to work, and he like texted me that day, and he was like, oh, there's no shot we're getting those. Like, the line was like, you know, out the door, down the street, all that, you know, and it was gone. Like, they cleared the whole thing out. So it was really hard to get one for a while. I eventually got one, and of course it was a Tim Anderson jersey, which is, you know, which is still, you know, he was great on the team, and he had some great moments, and he was a leader, and had that walk-off home run in the Iowa, the Field of Dreams game, you know, so still cool to kind of have that memento from the failed rebuild. But those City Connects, man, like, you get the good ones, and they're hard to come across, and I think the last couple have been great. The Mets one is really slick, and then the Rays, I absolutely love the Rays, because also maybe I'm just biased against Florida in general, but I don't think of Tampa Bay as like a happening spot. I don't even think of it as like a spring break destination. Like, my uncle lives there, and I went to visit him once, and I fell asleep because we were just watching golf the entire time we were there, and I was like 8 years old, and like Tampa is meh. And they come out with these, like, the neon, the stingrays, the logo with like the bridge, and the skater, the stingray, like doing a trick. And just like, yeah, the colors, I mean, it's awesome. And so I felt like we had really hit a lull with the City Connects. A lot of them sucked for a while there, but the last couple have been awesome. And I'm sure as a Mets fan, cause like you had to wait so long, they first did them, what, like 3 years ago? So
yeah, so it's been quite a while. And by the way, send all hate mail to PL On the Farm on Twitter for Jake's takes on Tampa Bay.
Sorry if you're from Tampa Bay. I just
No, I completely agree, Jake. Those jerseys look good. Remind me a lot of like the 90s, like Nickelodeon green, like the slime green and stuff in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a 90s kid, so that just like stands out to me right away. But with the Mets jersey, like whenever they dropped the logo that it was going to be purple, I was like, oh no, like we're going to look like Barney's out there because we're the Mets and that's what they do, right?
Right.
Just like purple and green. But no, they did a fantastic job. And it's funny because I didn't know this, but maybe it is just for the Mets. They give the starting pitcher the choice of when they want to wear them.
Oh, really?
So over the last 5 games, we have worn ours 3 times.
Gotcha.
So okay. They're going to be every Saturday, no doubt, with the exception of the Daryl Strawberry jersey retirement. Uh-huh. That's the only one. So every Saturday, but then these pitchers get to choose if they want to wear it that day.
That's awesome.
Severino, whenever he carried that no-hitter into the eighth, City Connect. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Love when the players buy into that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and you could tell they just love it. And I love how all the accessories match it, too, the purple and, like, and it was funny. I was listening to the Mets pod just recently before I keep going, like, on and on a tangent. They were, like, really just like me, like, it could go so wrong with the purple. It could be too much. And one of them actually ended up saying, I could use a little bit more purple on the hat. But, man, that's a fine line, Jake.
Yeah, right.
Too much
yeah.
purple can go the wrong direction.
Yeah, because then you look like the Dodgers with just the blue. Or even the Cubs. The Cubs had different shades of blue, at least, but I don't know if that makes it much better. Yeah, it can get ugly pretty quick. Yeah. Mm. But, yeah, I just – there's only, like, a couple more left, right? It's – I don't even know who it is, but there's like 2 left. And then they're going to be done this year.
Did the Yankees do theirs?
No. So the Yankees and the A's aren't doing them at all, I don't think. Because the Yankees, good. Of course, are snot-nosed and just think that they're better than everybody. And then the A's, well, yeah.
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 Can they put dice on theirs?
Dice.
Roulette.
That would be, man. Hmm. That's, yeah.
It's City Reconnect.
City Reconnect. Oh, my God. And, yeah, so it's, screw the A's. But I don't know. But then I saw something that said, like the Nationals are retiring their City Connects after, it's either after this year or after next year. And so it's like, what's the point? You know, like, why? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like a lot of these are just going to be dead within the next few years anyway. And I don't know what they're going to do after that. But it's always fun when you get something. Like the players weekend is always fun, a different, just, you know, something else. Cause it's so, baseball uniforms are so weird and strict and like it's, and especially with the Yankees, there's a lot of weird like tradition there that like no one, don't really care about, you know? So it's nice when we could like mix it up a little bit. Cause like a lot of other sports do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, City Connect, love it. Glad that you got your Mets, Met City Connect, and hopefully you get to grab one of those, maybe for some sort of discount, or just get one of the
one of the hats would be great.
Yeah, no, right? Because like there's, like you said, with the accessories, like you can get branded gear. Another thing about the Mets that was awesome, the with Senga's jersey, like being in Japanese, like his last name on the back. I saw that was awesome. That'd be really cool. I'm not even a Mets fan, but I, like, if I was, that'd be really hard not to pull the trigger on that one, because that's just like, you know, like you just don't see that, you know. So that's awesome.
That's true.
Yeah, I wonder if when he gets back, maybe he'd be able to wear that. I think that'd be awesome to feel that in the game.
I'm sure he will.
All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. On to the topic for the day. We'll talk about some AA hitters first, and then AAA. But actually, before we do that, we will talk about some debuts. Almost jumped the gun there. So we're going to talk about just like a handful of guys that made their debuts this week. I think all of them Tuesday. Just a rush of players that came up. So we had Jordan Beck, outfielder for Colorado. Tyler Black, first baseman for Milwaukee. And then Joey Loperfido, an outfielder for Houston. And I mean, these guys had all been killing it in AAA. Beck called up with Nolan Jones going on the IL. He was slashing .307, .405, .594 with 5 homers and 5 stolen bases in 25 games played in AAA. Tyler Black was slashing .303, .393, .525 with 5 homers and 3 stolen bases. And then Loperfido was slashing .287, .393, .713 with 13 homers, 5 stolen bases. And I mean, like, these guys all, you know, definitely deserved it. I think it'll be interesting to see how the profiles start to play. Like Tyler Black, he was a kind of a popular name in the offseason, maybe like a sleeper prospect there. But he just doesn't, hasn't carried a ton of power, really through any level. So we'll see how that gets. Clegg had a tweet about him that made the point that he is with his, like, with his launch angle, his swing generates enough fly ball. So he just kind of like lifts them out, pulls the ball really well. Also just a really great contact hitter. And then he got Beck and Loperfido with the power with 13 homers. It'll be interesting to see, how that translates. We had a similar thing with, Nolan Gorman. I don't think it was last year, but the year before when he hit like 15 homers in the first like month or two, and the Cardinals called him up, and he like, I think he ended up hitting like 12 to 15 that year, but it never was quite the same, like, you know, heater that he was on in AAA. So it'll be interesting to see how these guys adjust after just putting up some gaudy stat lines, and if they could stick, you know, because I think Tyler Black's interesting first baseman. You usually see a bit more power. Loperfido was actually got Jose Abreu sent down, so it'll be interesting to see how long that lasts. So, Rick, what are you? Do you have any thoughts on any of these guys? Anyone stick out to you for when you're looking at for this year?
Well, yeah, I mean, with Jordan Beck, I mean, the guy's big. He's a massive guy in terms of like what he's able to do. He'll be a good contributor there for Colorado. He was fantastic at Tennessee whenever he was there. Really kind of shot through the minor leagues. I'm excited to see him. I saw a video today because I was watching the Brewers game, and Tyler Black's father ended up announcing during his base hit with one of the interviewees or interviewers or whatever. I thought that was really, really cool. Tyler Black, awesome, awesome prospect. Really fun to watch if you ever, well, now you'll get a chance to with the major leagues. But in the minor leagues, it was a lot of fun to watch. Thought it was really interesting that Milwaukee was playing primarily at first base to start this year, because he was getting a lot of run at third base. He's a natural second baseman, was getting some run at third base, but Ortiz kind of, you know, put a wrench in that one. And now he's been getting his reps at first. So I'm very curious, especially with Hoskins, you know, doing what he's doing right now. How long will that last? But we'll see. I'm really excited. I like Tyler Black a lot. So that's great. Mm-hmm.
And did you see who his dad is? I had no idea.
Yeah.
It's like like one of the most famous sportscasters in like Canada.
In Canada, yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. So that was pretty darn cool, because he said that he goes to the Rogers Center all the time growing up. So I was like, oh, that's amazing. And then Loperfido, I mean, good for him. That's awesome. And in true Astros fashion too, right? Having like arguably one of the bottom farm systems year in, year out, and they continue to be able to get this or develop this kind of talent.
Right.
And Loperfido, former Duke Blue Devil, getting it done at the major leagues now. I like it. I like it.
Yeah, I think the one thing to watch with Loperfido, I think, will be that the contact rate and strikeout rate. I mean, last year, AAA struck out 32.6% of the time in 138 plate appearances. And then this year in 122 plate appearances, struck out 30% of the time, 30.3. So, you know, contact rates will be interesting. Kind of have to keep up to date with that. Not ready to like fully buy in quite yet, but he'll get run. You know, he'll be able to play a little bit. He had a nice RBI base knock for his first major league hit, and you know, we'll see. Yeah, I think like if you're in like a redraft league or think about picking up on the wire, like if you have to spend, if you're in like a fab league, I don't think I'd spend too much, because I think there's going to be other prospects that come up with like a bit more impact. But yeah, I don't know. Rick, do you think you'd like go after him pretty hard in if he's available in your league?
I mean, he's absolutely been rip roaring hot right now.
Yeah.
So
it'll cost a lot.
I wouldn't. That's the problem. That's the thing. I don't know if I would pay up for that right now. It's hard to say. It's hard to say. I mean, buying in so hard on some of these guys early in the season can either make or break your season. You know, sometimes you can really get lucky with this. And if you told me we get to September and he's sitting here with, you know, 20, 25 bombs for Houston, it wouldn't surprise me. So, you know, it's one of those things. You got to look at what your fab is, and there's going to be a lot more prospects to come. I mean, I've been doing a lot of articles here just recently about guys that are going to be the next up. So, and we'll touch on some of them here in this episode. So,
Yep. And that's a, by the way, a 76.7% zone contact rate for Lil Profito. So definitely some warts in the profile, but 13 homers is 13 homers. So, you know, got to respect it. All right. So moving on to the AA standouts here. Guys who have really kind of taken off to start AA that we think, you know, maybe can be getting a call up to AAA soon. There's definitely a shot that we still see some of these guys this year. I think last year we saw a lot more players, you know, get promoted even straight from AA or make a couple jumps in the season. So, yeah, I think it's definitely these guys are closer than maybe they would have been in the past. And some of these guys have had some prospect pedigree behind them, some power to their name, their stock. And so, like Zach Veen was a huge name as early as like what, a year ago. So he just had like a really rough season last year, riddled by injuries, never really got going and just fell off. You know, every year so many guys pop up and demand spots higher up in rankings and things like that. And the guys who, you know, struggle a little bit fall off, and that's exactly what happened. But he's still 22 years old, and this is his, I think it was what, his third stint in AA now. So definitely want to see him get that call, but just to see him kind of back in the swing of things is great. He's already stolen 7 bases in 65 plate appearances, and he has a bit more power this year. That's his isolated slugging. It's .255 overall slugging percentage, .582. So I love to see that. He's hit a couple homers. And I mean, like, put him in Colorado. Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. And I want to see here to look at his, let's see here, like home run fly ball looks good. He's not hitting a ton of fly balls, hitting a ton of line drives. That's been the big difference for him. Last 2 years and last two stints in double A, 16 and 78% line drive rate. And this year so far, it's at about 40%. So that'll probably cool off a little bit. So there's definitely a bit of it that's BABIP driven. It's a 444 BABIP, but someone with his kind of speed, if he could just like stick with some of that power and just kind of settle in at like league average, then he could definitely be an impact guy.
I absolutely agree with that. And that's the thing, like the injury really derailed his season last year. So you really can't look too deeply into his numbers. But I mean, already off to a hot start, already matching his home run output for last year in 16 games, as opposed to the 46 that he had. What I like to see, Jake, is that he is continuing to stick to his game. 15.4% walk rate with a 26.2% strikeout rate. That's fine. That's getting it done, because, you know, that's one of the major concerns that we had at the end of the 2022 season, was the strikeout rate starting to climb up. I'm still curious if he's going to get to that above average to potential plus raw power that a lot of scouts were putting on him. I'm not completely sold. Obviously, you know, coming back from the injury, we'll see how he does as he continues to play this year. I still think that there is plus speed, though. I want to see him be able to get back to that 50 stolen bases, you know, and even last year before going down, 22 stolen bases. So once he gets on his roll, we'll see that, you know, potential double plus speed that he's so known for. But definitely a good sign early with the high contact ability.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Then moving on here to the next guy that we have, Gabriel Rincones Jr., the outfielder for Philadelphia. 13 games played, he slashed .300, .417, .600 with 4 homers and 4 stolen bases to go along with 13 runs and 5 RBI. Weirdly impressive that he must be hitting at the top of the order, having 4 homers and 5 RBI. They're just horrible luck. But Rick, you had mentioned that you were really excited about this guy. What are you thinking with him?
One of my favorite prospects coming out of the season last year. I thought that he got really hot towards the end of the season. And then whenever I saw him in the Arizona Fall League, he was making some swing adjustments, finding a lot of success while playing in the Arizona Fall League. I've seen that already start to, you know, bleed over into this season. Obviously, with the 13 games played, like you said, the 4 home runs, he's getting to a lot more power. I saw that in the Fall League whenever he was participating in the Home Run Derby. So, you know, if he's able to get into that power and already hitting for a good average, the OBP has been solid as he does have a 16.7% walk rate. At every stop in the minor leagues to this point, it's been double-digit walk rates, so I'm not worried in that front. You're going to get good OBP. The strikeout rate, I do want to see that come down a little bit, though not egregious at 26.7%. But this is a guy that'll be able to give you, you know, very solid, you know, home run potential if he continues this pace, as well as some stolen bases as well. I think that he'll be able to give you, you know, 25 stolen bases. He had over 30 stolen bases last season. I think he probably could recreate that, but I wouldn't bet on that once he gets to the major leagues. 25 and pushing 30 would probably be about where I have him. But I think that he's going to end up getting the 20 to 25 home run potential this year easy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's sounds like a pretty good profile, especially playing for the Phillies and in that park and that lineup. And I think even as guys kind of move on as some free agents, I think like Castellanos is going to be there forever. Schwarber, like he's in the right spot to kind of come in and capitalize as some of these guys age out. And they continue to kind of get development from, you know, Marsh and Rojas and whatnot. So I think Rinconis is definitely kind of squarely in that next wave of guys for them. And then you just love a profile that's as well-rounded as Rinconis is, you know, with the, you know, not great contact skills, but has great quality of contact and just sees a ton of pitches. Like he's not a really aggressive swinger. Has about like a 40% swing rate, which is about 10 percentage points less than league average. And so definitely selective, you know, takes his time at the plate. And, you know, maybe that kind of puts him in some deep counts and maybe he's not a great, you know, off-speed pitch hitter. Not entirely sure, but I think it'll be interesting to see how his approach kind of adjusts as he moves up in the minors. And I think that he's somebody who can really kind of contribute across the board. And if for somebody who kind of sees as many pitches as he does, he definitely has top third of the order potential, you know, get on base in front of those bigger hitters in the middle. So definitely someone to keep an eye on there. And then next I want to talk about Jacob Wilson, who was a first round pick in the 2023 MLB draft. And he was really like the, you know, one of the guys in the first round that not a lot of people, you know, loved the pick from the A's. Would definitely see it as someone who doesn't have a ton of power, maybe any power. And just compared to the guys that were on the board at the time, you know, wasn't great value. But so far in 2024, he has been absolutely crushing the ball. In 16 games played, he has slashed .417, .438, .633, with two homers, 11 runs, 11 RBI, and two stolen bases. So I think it's, I mean, it's nice to see that, you know, he's picked in the first round for a reason, and so far it's been going really well. Rick, did you have any thoughts on Jacob Wilson? Do you think that he might be getting a bit of a unfair shake with the draft coverage, or do you think this is maybe just like a hot stretch?
I think with the draft coverage, that was kind of an unfair shake. He was really, really productive at Grand Canyon University, and actually I believe that he ended up playing under his dad's tutelage. I think he was the skipper, but anyway, extremely good bat to ball skills, really kind of like how Nick Madrigal was whenever he was taken out of I believe Oregon State. I think that's right. So like an expert type of you know, potential hit tool, which obviously Madrigal didn't quite get there. But Jacob Wilson has got extremely good bat-to-ball skills here. The power was where I was not quite sure about whenever I was writing about him while he was at Grand Canyon. But I thought that he had solid speed, not great, but solid speed. But the hit tool is where it was at. I think the issue with Oakland and the hate that he's gotten on it is because of like their previous first-round draft picks, Max Muncy, I think the year prior, was one that they're just like, you know, you're just getting a lot of these like slap hitters and you're not really getting anything of massive value at that pick, those high picks that it was, because this was sixth overall. So I think that's where it was. I mean, once again, just sticking to what he does, he wasn't really one that walked a ton at Grand Canyon University. So this is the weird thing about him. He is a high contact driven player. A 1.4% walk rate so far this year in 70 plate appearances. 6.1 last year in 99 plate appearances. You're not going to get much walks. But here's the thing. He doesn't strike out much either. So he knows where to put the bat on the ball and get the base hits, basically. So he strikes out at a 12.9% strikeout rate this year. That's great. Last year was 10.1. So this is around where he is. And it fits with his college stats, too. This is a guy that I think is going to continue to rise very quickly. And it would not surprise me in the slightest to see him potentially get up with the A's at the end of the year. If they're trying to save some face with the fan base, you know, that would be preferred probably. But, you know, from a dynasty standpoint, I'm not all that interested unless he's going to help my batting average in certain categories. But a lot of these leagues are kind of moving away from that to begin with. Unless he bats at the top of the order and that order is actually doing something, I don't see a ton of fantasy value here.
Right. I mean, he needs to either steal like a ton of bases or develop some pop, you know, because just being a slap hitter, great contact hitter, you know, just with if you're in OBP league, like he's not going to take walks. And so you need him to hit 300 to have a shot at like a league average on base percentage if it kind of continues like this. So, you know, tough, but that contact rate is sitting right now at 88% overall, which is ridiculous. Usually it sits, I think league average is around like 75 to 78%, and so he's great, you know, great contact hitter. You kind of have to give him that, but really needs to develop something else, you know, something else, because that alone isn't quite going to be enough for fantasy purpose, at least, especially if the A's lineup doesn't quite develop. But he is really their big option at shortstop. Like they don't have like. They've tried Daryl Hernandez there this year, hasn't done a whole lot. They have like Nick Allen. He's not going to be there for very long. I don't even know who else they have. Geloff is second base. I'm not even really seeing anybody. Max Muncy maybe, but we've been waiting for him to do something for a while. So it feels like the shortstop is potentially his to kind of take advantage of and step into. So, he'll definitely get his opportunities, but you know, I think maybe really deep leagues where you just need like somebody playing to get some sort of production. And I think, I mean, no one really has a really high evaluation of him. Like he's not high on any lists. If someone has him on their roster, he's definitely not like an untouchable guy. So if you really need a shot, if you like the contact skills and you think maybe that ballpark in Vegas is going to be really, really tiny. Who knows? But yeah, so it'll be something to keep an eye on, because any first round pick is definitely someone to give a little bit of rope. But yeah, we need to see something else for sure. Moving on here, Colby Thomas, another Oakland Athletic prospect. They're not good, right? Like they're not going to have a great farm system. We'll see. But Colby Thomas, 20 games played so far, 316, 382, 582 slug, 5 homers, 9 runs, 15 RBI, and 8 stolen bases. So looks like a really good power speed threat. That's a pace for what, like almost 30 homers and 50 stolen bases if you average that out over a full season. So really seeing the ball well and impacting the game in a lot of different ways. Rick, what did you would you have for us on Colby Thomas?
So this is, I'd say, probably my favorite prospect in Oakland's system in general. Definitely one that has been skyrocketing up my rankings for quite some time. I'm trying to be careful about how quickly I move him, because I can get really excited about this type of profile really easy. But Colby Thomas has been extremely solid third round draft pick out of Mercer. Shout out to the Georgia College Mercer and your Bears. But just absolutely fantastic year so far, 21.1% strikeout rate, you know, the home runs, the stolen bases, you love seeing that. This is a guy that could be able to bat in the middle of the order. And at every stop so far in his minor league career, he has hit. Hasn't batted below a 283 in his 3 stops now. So I think, you know, if he continues to push like this, once again, we're talking about the Oakland Athletics. I keep thinking that, you know, maybe they'll bring these guys up, but there's just a really good or a good chance that they're just going to slow play them, you know, play half the season in AA, play half the season in AAA, and then we'll get you up whenever we play our games. They're playing Sacramento next year, correct? Before they move to Las Vegas.
Yeah, and it should be, I don't think they have like a specific date for the Vegas site, but I think they'll be there like 3 years.
Yeah, so realistically, I mean, Colby Thomas could be one that they end up bringing up this year. I really think they should, but it wouldn't surprise me if he earns a spot maybe out of spring training next year. Regardless, I think now is the time. Industry guys are writing about this guy left and right because of the exit velocities. I'm moving him up. I guarantee you Cross, Clegg, the Welsh, they're going to be moving them up. So buy into him now because, you know, once again, it's the cost to acquire, right? And the numbers are really backing up what he's been able to do to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say that, Rick, I did just put a claim in for him for one of my dynasty leagues. So you've convinced me.
Good.
I had a guy.
You'll be rewarded handsomely.
I really hope so. I'm really, really counting on you here. But no, because I promoted Andy Páez in that league because we have like it's 20 minor spots. And when you promote a prospect, you can't bring him back down. Like he's, you know, he's up for good. And so I had an open spot. And I got a little waterfall here. Colby Thomas is now on it. So maybe we'll see. The other guys I got right now are Bove from last week and then Kendall George. So we'll see who I grab. But I love, see, this is why I love chatting with you, Rick, because you deepen my my pool of players to pick from in these leagues because my leagues are not nearly as deep as yours. And so usually when you bring up anybody, they're available, which is always great.
I try to make a point. It's so funny, man, because all my articles that I'm writing just recently here today, the last sentence of almost each one is like, they're like 1% owned in Fantrax leagues. They're like 7% owned in Fantrax leagues.
Well, moral of the story is follow Rick on Twitter, again, at MustBeTheHawk, because you're going to get a lot of single-digit percentage-owned players to go and take a look at for your roster spots, for sure. All right, moving on here. We got a couple pitchers here, and, you know, Rick had brainstormed some groups of players that we could possibly talk about, and he had three pitchers down here. Obviously, you know, you got some big stuff guys and Jacob Mizorowski, Nairo Iriarte, and Drew Thorpe as well. And the walk rates for two of those guys are, as Rick so eloquently put it, yuck. And Drew Thorpe, on the other hand, has a 1.88 walks per nine, which is...
And what did I say?
Not yuck.
Not yet.
I think that is a wonderful analysis, and we need to feature this more on the podcast. I mean, Drew Thorpe, like, he's going deep into games as well. Shout out to Clegg again. He tweeted today, I've had it up this whole podcast, and then now, of course, it's gone. Tweeted today a list of guys who have been going deep into games in the minor leagues for all pitchers in the minors, but out of everybody in the minor leagues, Drew Thorpe is third, or tied for first, actually, in innings pitched per game for six innings pitched per game. He's throwing 86.6 pitches per game and throwing a ton of strikes, 64.7% strike rate. So just, I mean, you absolutely love to see it. Not like he's a good mix of stuff. You know, he's got strikeout abilities, as you have here. He has a 7.88 K per nine. You know, like he'll sit right around league average for the strikeout rate, and then he's just going to excel at pounding the zone and just not allowing a ton of walks, which, I mean, you love to see because that is longevity. If you are in a quality start league, I think he's going to be great. And especially if you're in a quality start league, the one thing that sucks about him is that he's on the White Sox. He's not going to get a lot of run support, but it doesn't matter. If you're in a quality start league, he's perfect. Perfect. So, yeah, love Thorpe. I think he's just like a really solid, well-rounded pitcher. And, you know, I think the guys that are able to throw strikes that are avoiding the walks, they're just so much less risky. Even though Mizorowski, like, I mean, he's got a 13.75 K per nine right now, which is ridiculous, but just those walks, like, screams bullpen, you know, at the, like, it's tough, but it is what it is. So what, do you have any more thoughts on Thorpe or those other two guys?
Yeah, I mean, with Thorpe, he is so much fun to watch. I mean, here's the thing, though. I think we need to temper some expectations in terms of Drew Thorpe being a frontline starter. You know, he might end up settling into that SP3, SP4 range, and that is fine. That is fine. Do not be scared away from that.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, the days of the 11.39 K per 9, 13.05 K per 9 that he had with the Yankees in high A and double A, they could come back, but that fastball is not a fastball that's going to contend with MLB hitters, okay? He works off of his secondary pitches. That's where he's going to find his success. But the thing is, he can work with his fastball because he can pinpoint locate it, okay? So if he does stay where he's at right now with the 7.88 K per 9, I'm fine with that 100% because I know I'm going to get quality starts. I know that he's not going to get lit up. You know, he's going to be able to do what he needs to do. I'm trying so hard to stick with what I was saying in the preseason about, like, give me the Ks, I'll worry about the walks later, the Blake Snell approach. Mm-hmm. But man, sure. Mizorowski and even Iriarte is just, like, testing my patience with it significantly because I want to be like, no, it'll be okay. It'll be okay. But it's working on me. It's working on me. I listened to the Welsh talk about just recently about how these flamethrowers, you know, are only going, you know, 3-4 innings. But a lot of these funky pitchers that are out here, you know, getting good movement and everything with lower velocity is going deeper into games. Like Carson Palmquist of Colorado, a lefty with some funky delivery to him, has been finding success. And I'm curious if organizations are starting to kind of say, you know what, we don't want our flamethrowers to go deep. Noah Schultz, same thing on Saturday, didn't go too deep. I was very surprised by this, but I think they're trying to protect their arms. Jake, what do you think about that as opposed to like soft tossers being able to go deeper into games in the minors so far?
Yeah, I mean, because we've seen all of the high-velocity guys in the majors, they're all injured. Of the, you see that graphic that's been going around on Twitter every time someone else gets injured, it's like the top 10 in average fastball velocity, and it's just all the red X's on the side, one after another, after another. The only one left is, I forgot who it was. It's gone. It's escaped me. But I think there's 9 of the top 10 are on the injured list. And so, you know, if Tommy John becomes almost an inevitability for people who throw 97 plus on average or throw close to their max, whatever it is, then if you only have so many bullets, so many throws before the elbow starts to be affected, then it's like, yeah, we'll get you your development in the minor leagues. You'll pitch against minor leaguers, and we'll game plan. We'll work on your arsenal, but you're just not going to get third time through the order. Because, I mean, maybe, like, what more do you really gain from that third time through the order? It's the same players. It's the third time going after them. Like, and especially with kind of the way the minor league schedule is, you can face some of these teams, like, 4, 5, 6 times in a season, you know? So I think I see the logic there. Because so many of these guys that hit the majors and then they get Tommy John, like Yuri Perez, like I love that they, you know, pushed him through, but like didn't get to see much of him. And so it's tough. I think teams are maybe just trying to figure out the way to combat this without really abandoning velocity, because everyone still realizes that velocity is super important and it's the best way to get hitters out. But I don't think teams are willing to really take the Mike Rizzo approach and tell them to don't throw ball forward fast or whatever the hell he did, you know. So teams aren't quite ready to like care too much about their players' health because they still want to be successful. But I think this is their attempt to, you know, still recognize that the risk is there and then do something to combat it. Because I mean, yeah, I just did the math for innings pitched for per game start for Iriarte and Mizorowski. Iriarte sitting at 4.4, so just a little over 4 1/3 innings per start. Mizorowski is 3 2/3 innings per start. So, I mean, I think that if they were to get promoted, you know, push through and make their debuts, once they're in the majors, it's like, we'll let you go, you know, because you're here in the majors, you're doing, this is the ultimate goal. You're here, throw until you can't. And be smart about it, sure. But I think it'd be a bit different. In the minors, I just don't see a reason for guys to face the order three times because the games just don't matter at the end of the day.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, we'll definitely, I think, just continue to see more of that. One more guy in AA that we will chat about here is Wilfred Veras, first baseman outfielder for the Chicago White Sox organization. In 18 games played, he slashed .357, .370, .571 with 3 homers and a stolen base, as well as 10 runs and 8 RBI. Not a super well-known, not one of the one of the top popular White Sox names, but one that you seem to like a ton, Rick. So tell us more about Wilfred.
Yeah. So while you were doing that intro, I wanted to look him up on Fantrax because, you know, I'm on a roll with this. 4%. 4% up. Yeah, Wilfred Veras, I've seen him live in Winston-Salem a lot last season, and he just left me being very, very surprised every single time. I didn't expect it from his frame. It's 6'2". They list him at 180. There ain't no way. There ain't no way. He's over two. Right. I promise. 180.
How is a 6'2" man 180?
I don't know. But he moves. That's what I was so surprised by. He moves. But big raw power coming there. Only 21 years old, too, which is pretty awesome. So he plays first base. He plays outfield. He was playing some second base last year as well. This year, he is playing in AA Birmingham. He got promoted at the end of last year, so he started again this year. Currently with 3 home runs, 11 runs scored, 8 RBIs. The strikeouts are high right now, so he needs to be bringing that down, and the walks are low, but he's not really one that walks too much to begin with. While he was in high A and played 92 games last season, he was sitting around 25.1%. That's kind of where I want him to be able to be at long term. But he hit 11 home runs and stole 18 bases at high A. This year, he's slashing .351, .364, .554. Definitely a fun bat to be able to see. He's a guy that I think doesn't get talked about enough. Whenever it comes to the White Sox, and especially with all the trades and everything, I understand it. You like the shiny new toys. I do too. But Wilfred Veras is a fun prospect that inevitably they'll just move on like Christian Mena and just pretend that he never existed.
And with that wraps up our AA standouts section here on the podcast. So hope you all got some good actionable information, a handful of guys that are not very well rostered on Fantrax, so maybe we can all collectively change that a little bit. And we're going to take a quick ad break, and when we come back, we're going to move on to AAA, talk about some standouts, and some guys that are a little bit closer to the major leagues. Stick with it. All right, and we are back with the AAA standouts that Rick and I have noticed have been performing really well, who are some of them very, very close to the major leagues. And I mean, there's really just a fantastic crop of talent here that we talk about. I want to start with the pitchers because I love talking about AAA pitchers. They're all super exciting. And we got three great names, very close names. We won't talk about Skeens because, like, everyone talks about Skeens. Everyone knows, like, he's going to get promoted. Whenever he gets promoted, then he's going to strike out, like, 30% of that. It is what it is. Set in stone. But then we have Cade Povich, Christian Scott, and Sam Roberts.
Roberts.
All right. We have, you know, these guys who have all taken huge steps forward this year. There were kind of whispers about them in the offseason. I really liked Cade Povich going in and Christian Scott. And we've seen he's had some horrible luck with the fly balls. Maybe it's a skill. We'll see. But these guys have all had very similar success. I was looking at the swinging strike rate leaderboards for AAA, and of qualified pitchers, 5, 6, and 7, right there. Verbeers, Scott, and Povich, 13.9, 13.7, and 13.7. So, I mean, they're consistent dudes. They're owning their strikeout rates, and, I mean, they got the stuff to back it up. I've watched Povich a few times, and I just love his, I mean, it really, really looks a lot like the Blake Snell approach, especially from the left side. It doesn't have the velocity that Blake Snell has, to disclaimer there, but the just big, huge looping curveball, the changeup, you know, the fastball, it's a good arsenal, and he's making guys look foolish right now, and really kind of putting it all together. He struggled a bit after he was promoted to AAA last year. So a 45.1 innings, had a 5.36 ERA, and a 26.9 strikeout rate to a 14.7 walk rate. This year, in 26.1 innings, he has a 1.03 ERA with a 41.7% strikeout rate and a 10.4% walk rate. That is a significant improvement, especially on the walks. Like, I think the stuff has been pretty consistent, and I think we've known that he can get up there in strikeouts. But seeing that walk rate come back down to around 10% where he was at before he got the call of AAA last year, I mean, you just love to see it. So, Rick, who's kind of standing out to you among these starting pitching prospects? I have a guess. Maybe it's the hometown guy for you, Christian Scott, maybe. But yeah, what do you got?
Yeah, with before I dive into that, two things. One, calling it right now, Paul Skeens makes his major league debut over the weekend, or the beginning of next week, maybe.
All right.
Calling it now, call him a shot like Babe Ruth. Anyway, all right. Povich, I think he's going to be coming up very soon. Grayson Rodriguez just went down today, which is Wednesday when we're recording. So, you know, by the time you listen to this, you might be saying, yeah, K. Povich is already in the major leagues. There you go. You're welcome. But yeah, Povich is so much fun to watch, man. I think he's going to be very, very solid. With Christian Scott, all right, I want to kind of bring that up a little bit here. I got some news that Christian Scott was pushed by the Mets to pitch on 4 days rest, which means that he ended up going on Sunday, which would put him in line, theoretically, for a start on Friday, which the Mets just happened to be playing the Tampa Bay Rays. What is significant about this? Christian Scott is from the outside region of Tampa Bay, is about 40 minutes from the stadium. I think it's kind of odd that, you know, the Mets did this for him to potentially maybe debut in front of his hometown. So that could be a very real possibility. You are hearing it here. Not a definite, but I'm calling him a shot. Christian Scott, though, has been extremely solid this year. It's only a matter of time before he comes up. And I think with Adrian Hauser pitching on Thursday, this will be kind of his last opportunity to be able to hold down a rotational spot. Jake and I were talking about this before the pod. The Mets have talked about potentially going to a six-man rotation. So even when Tyler McGill ends up coming back off the IL, you know, he'll be able to slot into the rotation, no problem, and just kind of go from there. But for Scott, you know, 5 starts this year, 25 and a third innings pitched, already 36 strikeouts. That's good for a 12.79 K per nine. He's got the walks, you know, under control with 2.13 walks per nine. I love seeing that from him early on, and a 136 batting average against. He looks sharp. The home runs is what has been getting him early. But for a pitcher like this, where you're kind of working off of that, you know, that electric fastball and slider, if the slider sits in the middle, it's going to get crushed, right? So that kind of comes a little bit with the territory. DeGrom also had some home run issues whenever he was trying to go straight down the middle too. So Scott is very interesting. As for Sem Robares, Jake, is this not like the stereotypical Cardinals pitcher?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to go out there. I'm going to completely dominate by, you know, just not walking anybody. But I might not strike out a ton of people either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in 8.80 K per nine with Sam Robares in five starts, 29 two-thirds innings pitched, 29 strikeouts. But a 1.82 walks per nine, I love that all day. 1.82 ERA. I mean, he's only 22 years old, 6'1", 195 pounds. But, I mean, a fantastic arsenal. Fastball, cutter, curveball, changeup, very solid offerings. The curveball and the changeup is where the bread is buttered, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, with Sam Robares, I really like this. I thought it was a fantastic move that they got him from Toronto, very low key. And I think that that'll work out pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, you want to know what the organization thinks of him. I mean, he is currently on the 40-man roster. You know who is not on the 40-man roster? Gordon Graceffo and Michael McGreevy. And I mean, like,
boom.
They had head starts. They've been there for a while. You know, like, they've had their opportunities, I think, for sure. And the organization has seen what Sam Robares is doing. And, man, I think that they have a lot of confidence in him. And, I mean, like, they have Zach Thompson, who is definitely experienced in the minor leagues as well. So maybe, you know, Thompson gets a call first. But I mean, like, looking at their major league starting rotation, it was, you know, the whole story in the offseason was how old the starting rotation is. I mean, no one is younger than 32 and 9/10 years old. Steven Matz is their youngest starting pitcher right now. And so, I mean, like, with age comes injury risk and... I mean, they have Kyle Gibson having significant innings for them. He actually pitched pretty well yesterday. Miles Michaelis, like, these are not guys that are in it for the long haul. And there will definitely be some stints on the injured list, I think, this year for this group of guys. And I think they're going to need more than just Zach Thompson. I think they're going to need more than just Drew LaRomme if he comes back from the IL. So Robares definitely gets in at some point here. And... like you said, though, it's kind of the Cardinals pitcher where it's not a ton of strikeouts and it's a lot of contact, and maybe he goes deep into games, but that swinging strike rate, I like that. If you're getting whiffs, like, I don't super mind how you do it. Maybe some methods are more sustainable than others, but love to see those. That, you know, that is kind of crazy. Like, his swinging strike with a, what's the percentage here? With a 25.9% strikeout rate is darn near the exact same as Povich with a 41% strikeout rate. So take that as you will. Maybe they both have to average out, you know, one comes down, the other goes up. But I mean, he's getting whiffs and he's going deep into games. And I personally have some fatigue for Cardinals pitching prospects. I think there's definitely a bit of a stereotype with them because they've not been good. The kind of pitchers that the Cardinals go after are not the type of guys that you would love to roster on. You know, like, they have a type and it has been great. So it's hard for someone to kind of break that mold. But in real life, guys are who they are. And the organization at the end of the day only has so much control. And so if he's going to be a guy, he's going to be a guy. And I think that of these three, he could be the best value because of the kind of stigma around Cardinals pitching prospects because of the results. But he has good stuff, so I'm interested.
So yeah, so he's a great real life baseball player. Could be very good, dynasty or fantasy wise, but I think is really really good in deeper dynasty leagues
mm-hmm.
where you have you know more of these you know starting pitching prospects rostered. That's why like a lot of times you guys will hear me get like excited about some of these guys, and you look at it and you're just like okay. For shallow leagues, wouldn't really bother, in my opinion. But I would go more towards the deeper dynasty leagues because I know that I could put him in as an SP5, you know, in a 30-team dynasty league, and he will give me quality starts. He will go out there and he'll do the Cardinal thing. He'll do boring things and get me great stats. And guess what? We'll take it to the playoffs.
Yep, that's what you got to do. That's all you got to do. Just get to the playoffs and you're set. All right, moving on from the AAA pitchers, we got a couple hitters that we wanted to talk about. First off, it is time for the Guardians to bring up Kyle Manzardo. I mean, the 10-game stretch that he's been on, he's hit, what, 6-7 homers? I mean, it's just been ridiculous. He lit up the Arizona Fall League. I mean, like, he's such a polished hitter. And we knew this. Going into last year, we were having conversations about him potentially debuting with the Rays early on. And here we are a year later, still having not seen Kyle Manzardo. Like, what more does he have to do? He has shown us how good of an approach that he has, how great quality of contact he has. Like, it's, I mean, I don't know what more we could see that, you know, he's ready. So don't have to harp on him too much, because I think we're all pretty aware of what he brings. I mean, he should be a solid batting, like, he's not going to sink you in batting average. Even in his first year in the majors, I think he could sit like 250 or so, because he has just a good eye at the plate, as well as just some really great power skills. So, I mean, the Guardians lineup is also sneaky good this year. They've been solid. They've been, I don't know, top five, top eight-ish offense. So really liking what we're seeing for Kyle Manzardo. And I mean, like, he should just be a really polished hitter, just because the amount of time that he has spent in the upper levels of the minors facing really just quality pitching. So really like what we see out of Kyle Manzardo. Rick, did you have anything to add on him?
No, with Manzardo, same thing. Just want to say I called it. I knew that they weren't going to end up starting him to get the year going. They're going to wait till that Super 2 is all done, and then they're going to end up calling him up. So
it's inevitable.
I called it.
Yeah, that's fair.
That was pretty obvious.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that exactly was a great bold call.
Prediction. Yeah,
I got the tweet to back it up, though.
Yeah, there you go. You need the receipts. You need the receipts. All right. So, and then want to talk about a catcher, another Rockies prospect. We've been talking a lot about Rockies prospects.
Telling you, they're sneaky.
I guess I would. I'd actually love to see where they rank, where their farm system ranks right now. I don't even know who has organizational rankings, but anyway, Drew Romo, catcher for the AAA Rockies affiliate, in 20 games played, he's slashing .341, .345, .488 with a homer, 13 runs and 15 RBI. Obviously, ain't going to get you many stolen bases because, well, he's a catcher. And the Colorado Rockies, they have Elias Diaz, who is a really late career breakout guy. I mean, if you can call it a breakout, he made the All-Star team. He hit a home run off of Felix Bautista in the All-Star game. So, you know, got to give him credit where it's due. But he's 33 and a half years old. As a catcher, you're not going to be able to put in a ton of innings behind the plate. Right now they have Jacob Stallings, who can't really contribute much offensively. As well as, I mean, Hunter Goodman could play some catching if someone got injured, but they're not going to rely on him because he's also bad defensively, a catcher. I mean, the heir apparent is Drew Romo. And, I mean, he's produced very well offensively. The offensive environment is a bit different, but he's going to be playing in Colorado. So, Rick, what are the thoughts you have on Drew Romo here?
Yeah, so Drew Romo, still very young, 22 years old, drafted in the 2020 draft class. I mean, geez, that just feels like it was yesterday. It doesn't seem like it's already been this long. But, you know, the Rockies treated him as they typically do with their prospects. They let him play entire seasons at one level. And I think that they realized real quick that they were going to need to get him up to the major leagues relatively quickly with Diaz and, you know, what's going on with their catcher right now. Situation just age-wise. And so they bumped him from AA to AAA last year to finish out the year, started the year in AAA this year. Last year at AA Hartford. So the weird thing about Colorado Rockies farm system in general, guys, is they have all but one of their minor league affiliates on the West Coast. And then they have Hartford, Connecticut as their AA affiliate.
The Yard Goats.
And man, what a great stadium it is. Shout out to the Yard Goats. You guys are fantastic. Keep it up. That Duncan sign, I'm all for it. Let's go. Get your donkeys here. Anyway, so at AA last year, I want to talk about this first because this is going to be able to kind of help understand what we could be potentially getting a fantasy wise going forward. In 91 games played in AA, where a lot of Rockies prospects do struggle, all right? Even Beck struggled a little bit here at AA, but he stayed true with 91 games. He slashed .254, .313, .440, all right? but he hit 13 home runs, 48 RBI, 6 stolen bases. We saw an 18.2% strikeout rate. That was all at AA at age 21. Really, honestly, still 20 at that point whenever he was doing it. But, you know, this is a good catching prospect that is very, very solid with the bat. Honestly, I don't think he's going to play enough in AAA to be able to try to get to those home runs. But do not be surprised here if we're seeing, you know, 18 to potentially 20 home runs out of Drew Romo with, you know, a very positive batting average, OBP, you know, type of setup. He does not draw a ton of walks, so that's not a big part of his game. But he doesn't strike out much either. And honestly, from a catching position with good defensive skills and a solid bat as well, that's sometimes more than what you could ask for, you know, obviously with the Mets right now with Tomas Nito. It's all glove, no bat, baby.
Yeah. I mean, it's a situation where maybe he is like worth starting in two catcher leagues by the beginning of next year. You know, like, it doesn't take a lot to break into the catcher pool as an impact player, especially in deeper leagues or in leagues with multiple catchers played. And so another thing with Drew Romo is he's a switch hitter, and I was looking at his splits, and last year really struggled against lefties as right-handed hitter. Hit, I think, below 100 against them and really struggled. But this year, it hasn't been a huge sample, of course, but he is doing much better against lefties, hitting 267. Still not a ton of power from the right side at the plate, but I think that's, if you could just kind of, like, we see it with switch hitters, sometimes they just, like, the switch hitting doesn't do a whole lot because, like, they're hitting just about as worse as they would be as a lefty-on-lefty matchup. So if he's able to just, like, hang tough and produce, like, anywhere close to league average against lefties and you know, kind of really bring out the power against righties, like, he can definitely see playing time, not be limited to a platoon potentially. So just love that extra kind of potential ability to just stay in the lineup. And like you said, he's still young, like 22-year-old catcher, kind of really knocking on the door of the big leagues like this. It's a really good place to be for sure.
Side note, if he was able to get to 20 home runs, he would be in the top, let's see, one, two, top 8 catchers in home runs if he gets to 20 bombs in Colorado. Cal Raleigh led the league last year with 30, and Francisco Alvarez had 25.
Yeah. The offensive bar is low.
He does something similar. Yeah, it's pretty low. So he could be a potential dynasty catcher if he's able to hit for average, which is a big thing, and hit for that good solid power pop.
Yeah. If you have a deep enough league where you can just play, a daily league especially, where you could just play him against righties at home, if he's like your third, fourth catcher, hell yeah. Love that. Absolutely. So that's kind of the rundown of where AAA is at right now. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to get Rick to give us his thoughts on what he has seen live in real life with his very own eyes in the last week or so. So stick with us after the break. Alrighty, and we are back, and we are ready to talk about some live looks that Rick got in his recent travels throughout the Carolinas. So was able to see, looks like, 2 games here, and has some really great notes. So I will hand it over to Rick here to talk about the first game that he went and watched, the Winston-Salem Dash with the White Sox organization and the Rome Braves is it Rome Emperors now?
Yeah, it's Emperors.
Yeah, Rome Emperors with the Atlanta organization. Would you mention last time that you missed Noah Schultz, but you did not miss Noah Schultz this time. So what did you see from the left-hander?
Yeah, so I was thrilled to be able to see that. So Noah Schultz is a fun prospect to watch. Definitely stands out just because of his height. You can see him really, really easily. 6'7" lefty on the mound. I mean, massive, like, long levers, limbs, everything. But he does a good job with repeating his mechanics very well. The fastball was sitting 97, and it did touch 99 a few times. I was fortunate enough to sit behind a national scout who had his TrackMan up on his phone. So he would have it up in the cup holder here. So I was watching, you know, how it was coming in, because the scoreboards, they're always wrong. So it was nice to actually kind of see the TrackMan data coming through with that. The slider had excellent movement to it. And for those of you who do follow me on Twitter, go and check out the video that I did post on there. You will see a strikeout sequence in which that he threw three pitches, three strikes, sit down.
Nasty.
Like no wasted motion at all. And that slider had some excellent movement coming into right-handers. So you really need to take a look at that. He didn't throw the changeup very much. He might have only thrown it maybe two or three times. This is a pitch that he really did not throw much whenever he was in high school. So, you know, it's not very surprising, though I do feel that he needs to try to develop that pitch to at least an average offering in order to be able to offset what he's doing with the fastball. He, like a lot of, you know, high-velocity pitchers do, the contact that they do give up is very loud, very hard contact. He did give up a home run in the outing that I did see and did give up some fly balls. So he's going to be prone to this, which is why you're seeing his ERA kind of up north of 4 ERA at the time. But if he's able to kind of mix those pitches and keep them away from the center of the plate, that's really going to be the kicker in terms of his control. But it looks like the White Sox are continuing to limit his innings pitched, as he just went four innings, and then they yanked him out of there real quick. So, but he was cruising. He was effective, and efficient in his pitch count. So that once again goes to the theory that these guys are trying to save their bullets, quote unquote, in the minor leagues to try to get them up and have them be useful going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, with that kind of velocity and that kind of slider movement from the left side, if there was ever a profile where you can get away with two pitches, it's definitely one of them. The changeup, just using it to kind of just like the threat of the change, you know, it's just like seeing this kind of profile, it is really hard to not get like overly excited about it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, because you start thinking of like the Lodolos and the Sales with that lanky kind of movement with the velo from the left side with the sliders. And I mean, it is impossible not to go there. Because it looks the same, like you're looking at the same thing. And so it's really hard to keep expectations in check. But I mean, if there was anyone with the kind of ceiling, there's not a lot of guys I think that have the ceiling, because even some of the huge stuff guys have those walk issues, and Schultz isn't quite as bad. So, love what you're seeing there. And then who was the other guy that you wanted to shout out from that game?
Yeah, so I talked about a lot of the Rome guys last week, and I'll touch on more with the White Sox later on in this. But Jared Johnson was somebody that I saw out of the pen for Rome, and I was really impressed by him and how he attacked batters. This is going to be more of a relief pitcher type of profile. So those of you in shallow leagues, 10-team, just skip over this. But was very impressive out of the pen, 96 mile an hour with the fastball. He had pinpoint control, man. He was dotting the corners. He was getting it done. At the time, whenever he was pitching, in this game, he had a 12.71 K per nine, a 1.59 walks per nine, and a zero ERA in the five previous appearances in the season. Very interesting deep league target with Jared Johnson there. So I think that he'll end up moving relatively quickly, and Atlanta's very good about being able to utilize these relief pitcher prospects. Surprisingly, they have a lot of very interesting relief pitcher prospects in their organization.
Mm-hmm. Relievers are people too, everybody. We love relievers.
Put that on his shirt.
Yeah, right? They're not just failed starters. They are people. And they are nasty. So love relievers, and they're useful, you know, especially in those deep leagues. And then we got another game that you went and saw, the Greensboro Grasshoppers in the Pirates organization versus, again, the Winston-Salem Dash for the White Sox organization. So what you saw what the pitcher here from Pittsburgh, another lefty, Hunter Barco. Fastball sits 93, 94. Slider change at around 83. So you saw those two lefties. Kind of talk about how they compare a little bit and just what you saw from Barco.
Yeah, and a completely different way about going about their business, right? With Barco, he is an extreme ground ball pitcher. If you look up his numbers on Fangraphs, he has a 0% home run to fly ball rate. He does not like putting the ball in the air, like, at all. So he is a very high ground ball pitcher. He is a high left on base percentage guy. The fastball sat basically the entire game at 93. It did top out at 94, but that was like one time. And once again, I like to sit behind scouts. This one was courtesy of a Yankee scout, so thank you very much. TrackMan Data said 94. I like it. That's fine. I would like to see him get a little bit more out of the fastball because it is far and away not his best offering in comparison to the slider and the changeup. But he does throw it a lot more than what I would have expected him to. With the grades that it has gotten in the past. But anyway, the slider was a firm slider, but it was very effective. He knew how to work it and he knew how to work it out of the zone. So he does end up getting higher walk rates primarily because he tries to go a little bit more for the chase out of the zone with the slider. The changeup has very solid tumble to it. So it had some great late action life just tumbling out of the zone. But both of which came in at 83. Once again, Barco is just very odd to me, just in a lot of different ways. Two pitches that are literally coming in at the same velocity, but it was interesting because he was tunneling them very, very similar. So I think that's where he was finding a lot of his success. Both, once again, solid movement. Like I said, relied on the fastball more than what he should have, but they had really good spin rates to it. I would be very curious to see what his spin rates are. Just in general, the number that goes beyond it, obviously. So that would be great. Another prospect that, you know, I got a chance to see, we talked about both of these guys a little bit last week, but Jacob Gonzalez, once again, just working really excellent at bats, trying to get a pitch to hit. He was constantly on base in Greensboro. Just a guy that I think is still going to move very, very quickly. I mean, I really think so. And I think he's going to be your second baseman long term. I think Colson's going to be at short, and I think he's going to be second with Jacob Gonzalez. Samuel Zavala, once again, very, very good at bats. Would smoke the ball foul a ton, but I couldn't get him to get a hit for me whenever I was there in Greensboro. I was hoping every single time, and he was working the counts. I thought that he was going to get it for sure. But really good at bats, really good speed. Whenever he did reach base on an error, he did steal a base, so he did show off his speed on the base paths. Fantastic range in the outfield. This is going to be a fantastic center fielder for you guys long term.
Love that.
He's fun. He's a lot of fun.
All right, yeah, love to hear the update on those two guys. I think those will definitely be ones that we kind of keep tabs on, but good to hear that you've seen them a couple times now, and they've both kind of like really stood out to you. Love the at-bats that Zavala was taking. A couple other guys here, really want to hear about Tamar Johnson, because he has gotten, you know, gone through ups and downs for as far as a lot of attention and hype and whatnot. And he looked really good in spring training. So what were you seeing out of Tamar in person?
It's been a slow going to start the season, but he's starting to heat up. That's something I really took notice of in this game. And I've been seeing a couple in previous weeks. So made some fantastic defensive plays at second base, which, you know, should be noted, because one of the main things going into the draft was that the defense was suspect. They weren't really sure where he was going to end up being long term. Made several hits in the game, one of which being a double. I mean, every time he made contact, it was extremely loud. you can definitely tell where that, you know, double plus raw power is coming from, though it's coming from a very small frame. Watching him live, and you'll see this in the tweets, the videos that I have out there of Tamar Johnson, he is a smaller guy that generates a ton of power, very big in the lower half, and that's where he generates it from. Despite a slow start to the season, it looks like he's getting, you know, locked in at the plate, and I'm going to be excited to be able to see him going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's just such a great player to root for. I don't know why I love lefty hitting short second baseman with power. It's like the Chase Utley. It's just something about like tossing your second baseman in like the two hole in the lineup and just watching him like crush homers off righties. Like it's a very weird, it's like my favorite niche of baseball player. So love Tamar Johnson. And then you said that you have actually a personal vendetta against this next guy on the list, because I don't know, he has it out for you. Mitch Jebb. What were you seeing from Mitch Jebb before you had to take cover?
Yeah. So side note, a lot of lefty hitters in the minor leagues right now. I think we're seeing a major age of lefty hitters just in general. Both Tamar and Mitch Jebb from the left side. Mitch Jebb, I've seen him a couple times now. Very high contact ability. I don't see a lot of power in his swing, so he's going to be more of a slash and dash type of guy. And with potential double plus speed, it's easy to see. So like I said, he's been a little hit and miss earlier in the season. He did end up getting a double late, and then once he did get the double, he ended up stealing third. So you could see the speed in its full capacity on the base pass as well as out of the box. What Jake is referring to here is Mitch Jebb in one of his at-bats ended up drawing out a very good long at-bat. Ended up fouling off a pitch in which that I watched it go over my head. It hit the bunting of the overhang and then decided to spin with full force straight down onto my girlfriend's like shoulder, collarbone area. So yeah, that was great. So I looked at her and I said, yep, not covering Mitch Jebb anymore. So I'll make sure to tell him that. Whenever I go to the next game in Greensboro, I'll be like, Mitch, I didn't even get to keep the ball. Some lady came from out of nowhere and scooped it up. How about it?
That's just brutal. That's just brutal. You at least need, if you're going to get hit like that, you need the ball. You know, it needs to be worth it. Yeah.
Right.
Ah, it's horrible. All right. Who else did you want to shout out here that really stuck out to you?
Yeah, so I got three more real quick. Number one, Tanner McDougal for the White Sox. He was the starting pitcher, and yes, the final stat line was really rough. I do like what I saw with him, though. He was sitting 97 with the fastball early. He was sitting there late. I mean, he was a bulldog on the mound. 6'5". There's no way he's 185 pounds. I don't believe that. I even put in quotes here, looked bigger to me. Yep. The slider was a bit firm. Changeup as well was so-so. If he's able to kind of get to those, I think that he'll be in better shape. He does have good strikeout capabilities. If he can get the mechanics right, this is something to kind of just monitor. But already he's like a 5 ERA. So, I mean, not right now by any means, but put this in the back of your mind for later. Charles McAdoo was fantastic for Greensboro. Third base outfield prospect. Man, did he have a game. In the second inning, he ended up cranking a no-doubt home run and then crushed a triple, literally missed it by maybe like 6 inches, and flew around the bases, slid into third. I got the whole video up on Twitter, so go ahead and get it. Go and check that out. He's definitely an under the radar guy to watch in deep leagues. In 19 games played, he has a 303, 397, 545 with 4 home runs, 8 runs scored, 14 RBIs, 3 stolen bases. What I like the most, Jake, is that he's an 11.5% walk rate, 21.8% K rate. He's just 22 years old. He played in low A last year. He's in high A now. This is what you get. This is a guy that is something fun to watch right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Love that. And, you know, again, just some extra perspective you get just being there in person, just seeing just the way that he plays the game and the impact that he has on a single game. So love to hear that. Who's the last guy that you got listed here that we'll talk about?
Yeah, the last guy is Wes Kath. And this is a guy that I was really high on whenever he was drafted. When I saw him live last year in Winston, he looked bad. I could come up with other words, but bad was really just kind of where I want to sit with it.
Sure.
This year, he looks a lot more grounded. He looks like he bulked up over the winter, and he's playing a very good third base defensively, and he looks more comfortable at the plate. So in this game, he only had one hit, and it was a scorching single. I have the video up there. But, man, in every single at-bat, he worked full counts. He fouled off pitches left and right. The crack of his bat was so loud compared to a lot of these guys that I was listening to. And even on one, he ended up fouling off the ball, and I think it hit him, like, right in the gut area. So he went down for a little while with that one. But, I mean, he looked good. He looked good, despite the results not being there with the hits. So he's a guy that I want to try to get back in and watch what he's doing this year. So far, it's coming around. Slowly, but it's coming around. So we'll probably talk about Wes Kath a little bit later on in the season, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll continue to check in with Rick as he heads around the region and checks out some more minor league games and gets some extra input for us on what these guys are doing in real life and how they're looking on the diamond. So we'll definitely kind of keep up to date. Rick, again, thank you for going out there and getting this information for us, because this is awesome. And these are, you know, a lot of guys that don't get a lot of love. So love hearing your perspectives there. And that'll do it for our episode that covers everything that we wanted to go over. So make sure that you tune in again next week and kind of check us out again. It'll be May 10th. Of course, you could find the podcast on Twitter at PL on the Farm. You can find myself at Jake Mache and Rick at Must Be the Hawk. Everybody, thank you all so much for listening, and have yourselves a great baseball week.